Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, another weekly podcast. This one after Watford's 2-2 away draw at Bournemouth. It's Sunday night. Joining me is Jason.
Hello there.
And Michael.
Yeah, you got it right. Two away goals. Can you believe it? I thought Christmas was last month.
Yes, well, that's a good positive that came out of the game. Let's talk about it. As an overview goes, Jason, you look at the final result and you see 2-2 away at Bournemouth. You'd have taken that, wouldn't you?
I'd have taken it at the start of the game, but I can't help feeling it's a missed opportunity given we were in the lead with less than 10 minutes to go. And the fact that we've had a bad run and we sort of 3 points would have been nice for confidence. And when you look at the games we've got coming up as well, we've got a couple of tricky away games at Arsenal and Man U. Yeah, missed opportunity.
And but in terms of the performances, I mean, that's the thing, we can always look at results and they are the important thing, Mike. But when we look at the way that we played, can we take more positives as a team performance, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say I'm 100% with Jason. It's 2 points. 2 points dropped. We've played another team who are low on confidence. That's Middlesbrough, Palace and Bournemouth we've played now, who are on very, very poor runs of form, and we failed to beat any of them, which is a concern. But that said, an away day at Bournemouth has its challenges, as we all know. So a draw there, you probably would have taken it before the kickoff. But as a team performance, there were green shoots of recovery. So it looked like we'd sort of woken up a little bit and had a bit more attacking intent throughout the game. There was a little bit more confidence flowing through the team in patches. I would say they're very, very isolated patches. This was far from an awakening, if you like. This was far from a reversal of recent sort of slightly insipid performances, but there were just little signs of the ball was being zipped around a little bit more quickly, a bit more focus on attack, a bit more belief perhaps that we could have a positive impact on the game. So I'd say, yeah, being optimistic, if you like, being positive, there are some good things to take away from it. But the bottom line is we failed to beat a team who, like us, is in bad form. And there's probably as much to worry about as there is to be happy about, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, let's talk about let's keep with the positives a bit longer. The first one being Tom Cleverley. Mike, you gave him man the match. Yeah. In your ESPN FC player ratings. Jason, did he play the role that you saw him playing when he returned?
I think so, yeah. Starting with his first 10 minutes of Watford football in a game against Middlesbrough. One, he hit the post, was probably a bit unlucky. I don't think he had much to aim at when he did that. And then the ball that set Deeney away, that little sort of dink over the top, it's like a Premier League version of John Eustace. It's fantastic. And of course, in that game, he came on for Barami. He was in place of Barami for the Bournemouth game. And it's that sort of driving, creative force that we're looking for, and that seems to be what he's taken on at this stage.
But did it feel a little bit though, Mike, that there were, especially that first half, Wiltshire had quite a lot of space and we did sort of miss someone to be a little bit more, let's say, set back and on that sort of enforcer role?
I think we always miss a fully fit and fully firing Barami, because he shuts everyone down, he sniffs around, he snaps into tackles, he makes a nuisance of himself. So I think we're always going to miss a fully fit and fully firing Barami. And you're right, Bournemouth did seem to find a lot of space with the simplest of movement, really. It made Watford look static far too often. And certainly as the game wore on and as the clock ticked down towards full-time, they just the simplest thing, they'd find themselves with space and time, which is unforgivable, really. But if that was the price to pay for a slightly more attacking, positive approach from Watford, then I'm kind of willing to pay it, because Jason's right. Cleverley, he'd get the ball and he'd do what a Watford player hasn't done for what feels like months. Get the ball, drive on, be positive, look to make something happen instead of just existing and waiting for it to happen, which is how it feels like we've approached the games really over the last couple of months. The sort of attacking intent has just seeped away from us and we've just sort of existed out there. We've just been I don't know, it's very, very hard to describe. But yeah, Cleverley just gets the ball, he's positive, he drives on, he makes things happen, and I think Troy came to life a little bit yesterday seeing that happen. And I do think that perhaps it was a game that that Ighalo would have benefited from. The combination of cleverly getting the ball up there quickly and sort of getting the defence on the back foot, which is exactly what Ighalo likes to play against, the defence who's sort of in two minds. So yeah, I think he was definitely man of the match in my eyes. I think he's been positive since he arrived, and yeah, he's looking like a great signing. We need more people to click around him, but it was a lot more fun with him in the side yesterday, without any doubt.
Do you think, Jason, though, the fact that Cleverley has come from another Premier League side is quite a major thing? And if we are to get more players in, they just need to have proper Premier League experience, because it was this time last year in the fourth round of the FA Cup that we saw, was that Pantilimon's first game? It was definitely Amrabat's first game. And he played, he was like, oh, there's something there. He didn't take off for a long time. You know, do you think if these players that we are going to bring in, hopefully, fingers crossed, they need that Premier League experience?
Oh, there's no denying that it will help.
I mean, it will always help, but do you think it's absolutely vital that they do where Watford are at this point in the season?
No, I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Because if they're a top quality player with the right attitude and determination, I don't necessarily think that playing in English Premier League is essential. If they've got top flight experience elsewhere in Europe, then that's probably good enough. But it's the attitude they've got, the determination they've got, and the willingness to dig in, because we're going to have to dig in quite deep in the coming months, I think, just to grind out the results that we need from time to time. And it's the attitude they need rather than where they've played before.
In fairness, I think it's worth pointing out they did show a bit of grit yesterday, and there was more appetite, if you like, for the game yesterday, which has been lacking in recent weeks. I don't know if it's because they sensed that Bournemouth were struggling, but I think we have to give credit where it's due, and there was a little bit more of that spark, a little bit more energy, and a little bit more purpose yesterday. Sorry, Jason, interrupted, but I thought it's worth making that point.
Mark, you mentioned how maybe Ighalo would have been better in that game, and the enigma, let's call him, because I quite like him, is Akaka. You know, he had an amazing 15 seconds when he played at West Ham. He's played two really great games at home, the Everton game at home and last week at Borough. Last week he really tried to, the feeling was, oh, he can make things happen. He's making things happen as a player. But then he's had two terrible away games where, you know, everybody's not shining about him. The West Brom away and now Bournemouth away.
I have to say, chaps, I think he's flattered to deceive a little bit. I think I said even after the Everton game when he'd scored the goals, that I still think he's at best an average Premier League player, and he doesn't feel anything close to me to solving the goal scoring problem that we've got. I think he's handy to have, obviously because of his size. We saw, like you mentioned, his brief cameo at West Ham was great. The Everton game was good fun as well, but you know that watching him, you're not going to get that every game from him. And yesterday the Bournemouth game was a very, very clear example of that. He did the hard work. He used his enormous bulk and frame to put himself between the defender and the ball, which is exactly what you'd expect him to do. So he did that hard battling bit, and we thought, right, okay, the ball's coming your way. You've got yourself in possession now. Let's do it. Either play the ball, spin off, and on you go, or beat your man. But not once did he manage to do anything with it. He seems really, really bad at holding the ball up, which is what you'd expect him to be good at. You know, that get the big man up there, get the defender out of the way, hit him, and then he can hold the ball up and play in, I don't know, cleverly arriving or Capu or Deeney, whatever. And it just didn't happen. He struggled with the ball for the entirety of his his performance yesterday, and it was I'm not gonna berate him. It's not his fault. I don't think he's a massively talented footballer, and it showed yesterday. Handy guy to have to perhaps come on with 10-15 minutes to go. I think the West Ham performance is probably the way I see him, his Watford career being, if you like. If we need something different with a couple of minutes to go, throw on the archetypal big lad and see what happens. But I thought he really, really suffered yesterday, and the only surprise for me was that he didn't come off sooner. He came off just after the hour mark. I think it was 62 minutes. Jan Mac came on, and I would have had him off at half time and put Ighalo on, quite frankly.
John, you said he had a great game against Middlesbrough.
Did I say good or did I say great or good? I'm going to go with it was a good game. It was the moments where you think, oh, right, that's what you can do, and you know, using his style and his size, it was, you know, creating things from some occasions from what you thought was nothing.
He did, but equally, I found him a little bit frustrating last week because there were lots of sort of hand gestures in the air, sort of throwing his hands in the air, which seemed to culminate in that half-hearted attempt to try and win a penalty that he got booked for right near the end. So it was a bit, yeah, good and bad last week for me.
Let's go on to the man who people are talking about. Oh, there's two men people are talking about the most, I suppose, in from yesterday in terms of negativity on Twitter. One is Cabool, and the other one is Cabaselli. Cabool, Mike, is he your first choice back three?
I'd have a fully fit Cathcart an informed Cathcart alongside Britos and Prueda would be my preferred back three. I don't think necessarily Yunis Cabool is as bad as everyone makes out. I think his arrivals kind of coincided with a pretty poor run of form. So you can read into that whatever you like. But I think between them, all the defensive players at Watford have had poor runs over the last, well, this season really. We've never really had that solid defensive unit that we had last year. Even the beautiful Sebastian Prudel has had a couple of off games. So, I don't think Cabool's as bad as everyone makes out. I think he could have done better, I guess, for the first goal against Bournemouth yesterday. But it was a decent ball in. Who was picking King up is the big question. And then, of course, he was hung out to dry completely by Cabaselli's indiscretion, shall we call it. So again, was put in a very, very tricky spot for the second goal. I think, largely speaking, he's done okay. He's far from the best, one of the best centre backs in the Premier League. But I think again, with Akaka, I think he's someone decent to have in reserve should we have injuries or suspensions. But if we can get Cathcart back and confident. Which, because we haven't really seen the best of Cathcart really for a little while now, but when he was in full flight, when he was, you know, in the midst of his run, I thought he was as good as anyone we've had at centre back, and I'd have Cabool out and Cathcart in alongside Britos and Prueda. I think Britos deserves a little bit of praise yesterday. He's quite intelligent with the header back across for the first goal, and he tried to do it again yesterday, and it's just nice to see that a little bit of. A proper set piece, a proper set play. They didn't snatch at it. They did exactly what you'd hope they'd be working on in training. And so a bit of credit for our old Uruguayan friend Miguel there as well. But yeah, Cabool, I wouldn't shed any tears if he left the club tomorrow. But obviously we've been struggling with injuries, we've struggled with suspension. So he's a handy chap to have around, but he's not my first choice.
Well, he probably will get some appearances because Britos is bound to get a couple more yellow cards and maybe a red here or there. So you know he's not exactly a position where some opportunities won't occur. Maybe Cabaselli, Jason yesterday, just is that his lack of experience and immaturity as a professional Premier League footballer that makes him do what he did when he did it, just fall over. As, by the way, I did like Hornet's Nest Andy there, who said that there must have been a shooting in Bournemouth. Did anyone witness it? He just felt like he'd been shot. He fell down the floor like he'd been shot.
It was. I think it was nothing other than naivety for me, unfortunately. He was feeling his groin, I'm sure, before he cleared the ball. So if he thinks he's struggling and he needs someone to come and have a look at it, or he needs to go off, get it out. Because we all know that the rules are that you don't have to put the ball out of play if a player's down injured unless it's serious, when the ref will then stop the game. So to think you're going to be able to sit down when the opposition's got the ball and they're just going to kick the ball out when they're 2-1 down with less than 10 minutes to go, yeah, nothing but naivety. Having said all that, I think it was... The goal was poor defensive play all round. We've talked about Cabool maybe being a bit put off by it, but a defender needs to concentrate. That's one of their main sort of main skills, if you like, of a defender is your concentration. And he's seen it. He's seen the fact that Cabaselli's gone down Cabool, and he's then gone over to cover a Afobe, but he's let a Afobe get goal side of him just too easy. Just like stood and almost and sort of watched him wander past and. Giving him the head start to get the shot in, and that, yeah, it was just poor defensive play all round, both Cabaselli and Cabool.
Yeah, I think Cabaselli's done all right for me, considering that he's been playing as a right wing back, which is comprehensively not his preferred position.
It wasn't Amrabat, and he's been doing all right.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, two very different players, and he's been put in there, and he's done a reasonable job, I'd say. He does look like a little fish out of water sometimes, but I don't think he's done too badly, considering. But yeah, I mean, it was just. I think you know, when you do something, and then for days, weeks later, you think, oh, I cannot believe I did that. Why did I do that? And I'm sure he'll be thinking the same. The least he could have done was just sort of do something to sort of disrupt the play. Instead, I can't imagine for 1 minute he thought that they were going to kick the ball out. I guess I cannot believe that crossed his mind. I think he just went, oh, that hurts, and went down and. Just pretty, pretty hopeless. And yeah, Kabul could have done better. I think for both goals, we could have done better defensively in numerous phases. The thing that frustrated me about the second goal was it came from, and I talked about us being positive in the game, and we were to a degree, but we sort of reverted to type and played instead of when the obvious ball was, I think it was to get it wide, or there was a forward pass on, and they decided to go back. And then they ended up playing a really, really dangerous ball across the back that was almost intercepted and then the Bournemouth guy would have been through on goal. But they put themselves under pressure for absolutely no reason. And then it was a passage of play or two later after that this whole incident unfolded. And it all stemmed from just this sort of lack of positivity and then an almost lack of concentration. And it struck a chord, really, with what Jace was saying there about Kabul not switching on and sort of being able to mentally adjust to the situation that's unfolding in front of him. Because that kind of seems to sum up Watford altogether in the last sort of month, 6 weeks, 2 months, maybe. They seem static. They seem to make it seems very difficult to them. It doesn't seem nothing seems natural to them out there. And I think that shows in, as Jace says, people being unable to react to what's unfolding in front of them and to readjust and to deal with it appropriately. You know, you think about the top teams and how quickly they respond, whether it's in the attacking thing. You know, we've seen it so many times. A defender makes a great tackle. We think, oh, well done, he stopped that. And then Van Persie or Rooney or the Anelka or whoever it is there to smash it in when we think we've done all right. And that's all it takes. And same at the back when you think, oh, Troy's in here or in the past, it could have been Tamás Pristy or something like that. You think you're in, when all of a sudden, poof, they've been cleaned up. The ball's been taken off them, and they're on the attack. And that's the difference between Watford and where they need to be. They just can't react quick enough. They don't respond well enough to what's happening in front of them. And I think they're all guilty of that. They can't exploit the good situations, and they can't react to deal with the bad ones.
A podcast made by Watford fans, for Watford fans, from the Rookery end.
I was chatting this afternoon with Hornet Heaven, Ollie Wicken. He chose, so if he was in a starting 11 now, Jason, Gomez and goal, same as Mike, Prudel, Britos, and Cathcart. He then said, and this is, I said to him, you can pick whoever you like, and he said he'd have in midfield Decore, Cleverley, and Watson. With Deeney and at this point Okaka up front, and also Jan Matt and Holabas on the wings. Disagree with that?
Yes, I do disagree. I just think we're lacking something in the midfield there. I'd want Barami back in. I think Barami on his day, as Mike said earlier, is such an asset for us. I think when he's playing well, when he's fit. Yeah, he's just so good at breaking the play up and sort of recycling possession without giving the ball away when he's on form. We know he's not been on form for part of this season, but still probably been one of our better players. Up front, I think I'd go with Deeney and Okaka now, but when success is fit again, I think he has a role to play. Who I'd take out? 2 weeks ago, I'd have probably said Deeney. Now he's got that goal yesterday. He's hoping he can get a bit of run of form going again, and we have Deeney in success.
Did he not have? Did he had no found no place for Amrabat in that side?
No, he went with Jan Matt, and I said to him this was going to be the game for next week with the players that we've got, and Amrabat wouldn't be part of that lineup. And I suppose you're right that Jan Matt has been injured a lot. And hasn't had a really good run in the team to really know if he would pip Amrabat to that role, hey?
But working on the basis that Amrabat's unavailable and is injured, then yeah, I'm more than happy with Yamat. He came on with half an hour to go yesterday, and it's, you know, it's my catchphrase of the weekend. But that positive attacking intent, he's happy to get forward. He's keen to get forward, and we haven't had that. Or certainly, in my opinion, people may well disagree. But I just don't think that we've had that that impetus for getting forward. And then Yanmat was just getting into opposition territory, which is what you have to do if you're going to score goals and win football matches. So he's a key one to get back for me, Yanmat. I think he's a great signing. Like so many others, we haven't been able to keep him fit for whatever reason. But yeah, I think he's absolutely key, and I'm with Ollie and you guys. I'd have him in.
Mike's surname is Parkin. He has a son called Arlo. And this is our feature, Michael Parkinson.
Welcome once again to Michael Parkinson, a very special guest. It's Arlo. Arlo, how are you?
Good.
Now, you were at Bournemouth v Watford yesterday, down at the Vitality. How do you think Watford played?
I think they played a bit bad because they didn't get the ball that much.
Now, what did you do at half-time? Someone told me you did something a bit special at half-time.
I got to go on the pitch and take a penalty.
So you have taken a penalty on a Premier League ground. Can you tell us what that's like? Is it scary? Do you feel under pressure? What's it like? How did you feel with everyone watching?
I felt a bit nervous because there was loads of people standing in front of us.
But overall, was it good?
Yes, it was very good because it's my first time on a Premier League pitch.
And hopefully not the last. Arlo, thank you very much for joining us.
Bye.
Igalo, oh, always believe in your soul. You got the power to know you're indestructible. Always believe in Igalo.
You're listening to From the Rookery End.
I've played that one because I think it might be one of the last times we get to play it. I do miss playing the Kitchianya jingle, if I'm really honest with you. But Mike, there's a talk going around, 17 million for Igalo from West Bromwich Albion. Of course, on Twitter, there's a feeling, or there's an instant reaction of, thank goodness, he's rubbish. But I saw on the Hornet Effect blog, they talked about everything that he's done, and actually we do need to appreciate him, and we do need to appreciate him because we wouldn't be where we were for everything he gave the club, let's say, in that run-up for promotion at the beginning of the first half of the Premier League season last year. He got to 100 games yesterday. This isn't a player who's just done a little bit, but if we are the Potzos, and we are as shrewd as we have been for many years now with the transfer market, now is the time, do you feel?
With perhaps surprisingly heavy heart, yes, I think now is the time, as long as we've got a replacement lined up and someone else who's going to come in his place. I think you mentioned there what he's done for us, and it's not just about getting us promoted. He scored loads of goals in the Premier League as well, let's not forget. And I think any Watford fan who sort of waves him off laughing, saying, ha-ha, you know, good riddance, it needs their head read, really, because he's been great for us. You look back at...
I did actually laugh, though. Someone did say, this is revenge for Nathan Ellington. But I just liked it as a joke.
Yeah,
I didn't actually agree with the sentiment.
Yeah, of course. I get that. Because he had... You know, there's two things to be clear on. He's been great for us. He scored a lot of goals in the Championship. Then he went on to score a lot of goals in the Premier League. But it's also... impossible not to recognise that he's on an absolutely wretched run of form, and when things aren't going his way, I don't think he necessarily holds himself particularly well. He looks miserable. He looks down in the dumps, and he doesn't look like he's someone who's willing to play his way, fight his way out of this poor run of form, which doesn't do him any favours, certainly in the eyes of supporters and probably the coaching staff and owners as well. The fee mentioned is 17 million quid from a business point of view. If Igalo's happy to go, then you're going to say, well, for somebody who hasn't scored many goals in a fairly long period, 17 million looks like decent money, and we can then go have a bash at bringing someone else in. I would say, in Igalo's defence, and taking on board that, you know, I saw someone on Twitter the other day say that good strikers make chances, and I agree with that to a degree, and I agree that he hasn't probably worked hard enough to get himself out of the slump, perhaps. But I would also say that Watford, since Christmas last year, have hardly been creating, you know, doing wonders for their strikers, whoever it's been. None of them have covered themselves in glory, and that's and a lot of them, they could all point to the fact that there's hardly been any chances created. We have not been an attacking force. We haven't created much at all. So I have a degree of sympathy for Igalo. And whilst I think he probably will be sold if the paper talk and the rumours of this £70 million bid offer are true, I then would expect him to go and score goals for West Brom, because they're a team who have got their dander up. They seem to be comfortable in their own skin. They seem to be working out how to play, and you know they're rattling in goals left, right, and centre all of a sudden. And I think he'd join a confident side. And I think he'd blossom, and I think there'd be a lot of people thinking, oh, that's a shame. So I think we need to be careful about it. But yeah, on balance, I think the it's impossible to argue. I think that it feels, your gut feeling for me, and I think for most other people, is that his time with Watford is up. But I think that's partly our fault, as partly Watford Football Club's fault in terms of the way that they've played. And partly his fault, in as much as I just don't think he's done enough to show people that he's willing to battle. So it's going to be farewell, Iggy. But I'm sad and I'm nervous that he's going to make us pay.
He probably will do, but that's the old boy rule. The rumour coming in, particularly strong from Sky Sports and Watford fan Adam Leventhal, is, and I always say in my head, Karate, before I say his name, Zarate, who is coming from Florentina, a player who hasn't played a lot. I think that's sort of players you get this time of year, who's coming over. Seems, in many ways, a couple of mil, fairly cheap. And the other good thing, I think he isn't the replacement for Igalo. And I suppose the thing that Adam said on Twitter today was that he was more coming in to cover the Pereira role. And if everything if the transfer window pans out, then Watford would also bring in a striker. Does that feel like, yeah, that would be that's the movement you want, Jason?
Interesting one. I'm not sure about Zarate. Obviously, he got a lot of bad press when he was at West Ham. Don't think the fans particularly liked him, and he had a bit of a dig when he left to go to Fiorentina, which wasn't that long ago. And I think this time last year, he said he didn't like the role he was given, wanted to play a more attacking role, and wanted a role where he could do what he wants. Basically, he just likes to wander around a bit and do stuff. Which, okay, yeah, that's what a creative player does. You want him to roam about the pitch, find space, and make something happen. The problem is, we're going to need someone to work hard, as we said before, track back, which apparently he didn't do when he was playing for West Ham. If he comes in, do we need to change the way we play? If we're going to have this creative player sitting behind, well, I don't know, would we have a front two, or would we end up playing with one up front? With him behind, then the front man's got to then come back and track back behind Zarate, because he's not going to have to do that. Mm. Apparently, when he went to Fiorentina, he actually asked, I think it's Paolo Sosa who's the manager there, asked him if he could play that role. So you've got a player here who's sort of dictating the terms of what he wants to do. He's not played much for Fiorentina, then, you're saying, John. So what's gone wrong now? I think we're getting a player in who's got a bit of a self-centred attitude, probably thinks a lot of himself, just worries me a bit that he's not the man who's going to be up for the fight.
I think it makes sense, though, that he's going to replace Pereira, and Pereira was hardly a defensive dynamo, was he? He wasn't someone that was, wasn't both ends of the pitch very often. And, yeah, I think, you have to look at it and say, yeah, he's not getting any game time at Fiorentina. He's only costing £2 million, which in this climate, I probably would put £2 million as my value.
So 2.5, Mike. 2.5.
Right. Okay.
2.5.
Yeah. Okay. So he's better than me then, definitely. But so yeah, as Jace rightly points out, there's obviously not a bidding war for him. There's not. You know, he's available for a reason. But quite frankly, that's the way it is with virtually everyone we've signed. Because if most players have got a choice, but for where they go in the Premier League, Watford ain't going to be it, really. They haven't got a great reputation at the moment. There's the manager is sort of the jury's well and truly out, and I think that's putting it politely amongst sort of other supporters and pundits and perhaps other players. We're not doing well in the league, so we beggars can't be choosers, quite frankly. And we've managed to find ourselves in a situation where we need something to happen. We need something to spark us back into life. And it's very difficult to find those sort of players. We talk about players. I think the phrase I've seen on social media a lot is we need someone who's going to come in and hit the ground running. Well, of course we do. But everyone wants that player. Everyone in the bottom half of the Premier League wants that sort of player to come in and bolster them to stave off relegation. And everyone in the top half wants someone like that to help them push on and win a cup or get into Europe or win the league. So we still have to understand where we are. We're still Watford. We're in a terrible run of form, and as for the first time, people are asking questions about the setup, I think. So we're hardly an enticing proposition. That said, I'm always excited when Watford sign a player because there's always promise. There's always, these are professional footballers, elite athletes that have managed to get to this stage of the game. You know, he's played in the Premier League before. He's played in Syria. These aren't mugs. So who knows? He might click under Walter and the team here. He might hit it off with certain Watford players, and I think it'd be pretty poor form for us to write him off before he's even arrived. I think obviously we've had our fingers burnt before where people look like they're going to be good signings, and we get excited because they've got a bit of pedigree because of where they've played. So we're right to be perhaps a little bit tentative, but also I think we just need to give him, if he does arrive, let's give him our full support and hope he surprises a few people.
A podcast by Watford fans, for Watford fans. This is From the Rookery End.
Last Saturday after the game, a message on Facebook and Twitter from Kevin Affleck, the editor of WD Sport, saying that the publication was to cease. Are you surprised? Were you sort of surprised by that, Mike?
Was I surprised? Yeah, I suppose I was, really, because I think he'd found a niche. He'd worked very hard to get Watford supporters some decent gossip, some decent news. And I think you could see by the responses that a lot of people were sorry to see it disappear and Kevin move on. I think from a print point of view, I think that was always very, very ambitious. So perhaps not necessarily surprised that the newspaper side of things didn't perhaps pan out. But I know he didn't meet with universal approval with all Watford supporters, and that's everyone's right not to like or appreciate something or a service. But I think what the important thing is that you need people out there. I think what Kevin's not afraid to do, and which is valuable, is to be critical of the club, and I think that's very important. I think perhaps other outlets find that slightly more difficult because they feel in return for access almost that they have to be a little bit more generous perhaps, and the harder stories might perhaps get overlooked. Maybe that's unfair, but I think that was Kevin's big plus was his ability to be very pretty hard nosed really when covering Watford. So I think it was an asset in that respect.
I got up with Kevin this week on the phone, and I started by asking what his original dream was for WD Sport.
The dream was it to get kind of to be the first port of call for Watford news, to be trusted, respected. And also, business manager would also like to have it to have been profitable. It was profitable to a certain degree in the other boxes.
The newspaper came out, and
You know, I've got a wife who works in publishing. She works for a major publishing company, and the regularity of cutbacks and moving offices and everything in print, quite obvious for lots of people that it's a tough industry to sort of crack on. And when we spoke to you before, you sort of said, but actually niche print is sort of growing. Were there any particular hurdles that you found actually that, you know, I don't think we spoke to you really about, it was pre-print, when you actually went into print, that were sort of harder than you thought?
It was very, very tough, but the sales were very, very encouraging. The advertising was encouraging, but the print product kind of had to be shelved because I had some quite serious family health issues that took place at the time, and they were still ongoing. So that meant the print product just had to be shelved, just because I couldn't really dedicate the amount of time I was dedicating to the print product at the expense of kind of family. It ended up being a real 24/7 job. I kind of was the editor, the lead writer, the bookkeeper, the kind of, yes, very much the face of it. I was kind of delivering newspapers. I was putting newspapers in envelopes and sending them out to people. I was rearranging them on the shelves. So it became very all-consuming and quite tiresome. But
and that's the way it is often with anything new. You know, it does need someone to throw their heart and soul into it. And I suppose things happened at the wrong time.
Yeah, the planets just didn't align for us in that aspect. But I've still got every print product we did. I'm extremely proud of it. And the amount of people bump into in just walking to games at Sunday morning games, so when you're bringing the paper back, we loved it. So the feedback was quite overwhelming, really. So that was something really to be proud of.
The thing that you have been for many years now, Kevin, is a hardcore journalist after the stories, you know, really delving in and discovering it. And we definitely got that from the beginning of W Sport, when it was just that online proposition at the beginning of the Premier League stay that Watford on. What was your breakthrough story that really sort of people aware of what W Sport was?
It was actually going to Germany. I think my partner made a conscious decision to go to Germany and be there from day one. And we touched down basically the same day that the team did. And I think the Wo were lagging behind a bit then. I think they arrived 3 or 4 days later. And we managed to get kind of 3, 4, 5 stories out there, alternative stories, which we felt weren't out there. We managed to get those up and get them out first. And the following and the appetite for what we did just kind of grew from there, really. We got to meet the manager before any other press did. So we built up a good relationship with Kike from the outset, and many of the new signings as well, particularly Sebastian Prudel, who kind of said hello to us this week, still on the back of us meeting him in Germany for the first time. So I think we really laid our marker down when we were in Germany.
Out of all the stories you've had, do you think there was one that you enjoyed the most?
I think as a journalist, I probably enjoyed breaking the Kike story. I think we were UK first with that one, that he was going to be leaving. It was a brave story to run, and we got plenty of pelters for it, because fans essentially don't particularly want to know bad news about their club, particularly one when it comes to a figure as popular and as engaging and as likeable as Kike. And we grew very, very much to like him as well. So that was a difficult one to run, but we had to kind of stick to our journalistic principles. We were given the information, we had it verified by another source, and we ran with that one. I think that to date remains our record story. But the second record story was actually one we did with a farewell piece we did with Fernando Forestieri. I don't think we quite realised just how popular he was, but he gave us a lovely line about how he cried when he left Watford, and that really seemed to resonate with the Watford fans. So that story did particularly well. So that was a nice one to write. But yeah, from a hard news, hard-nosed journalist point of view, I think it was the fact Kike would be leaving before the end of the season was our highlight.
Yeah, I know that you're a proper journalist, you're not going to tell us who your sources are or anything like that. But did you find, let's say, over the season and a half that you were doing, you know, it was the first season Watford in the Premier League, you were a journalist at the same time when Watford were last in the Premier League. How did you see any sort of changes over that time in terms of how Watford were? Because I'm surely is a, you know, you can expect things to be a certain way, but the world that is outside of the Watford bubble, you know, the world that we're outside, that's outside of us as from the Wicker End and W Sport, that's a very different place. Do you think that changed things at all for a journalist at Watford? The fact, you know, since we've been part of the Premier League,
from when I was last covering Watford at the Watford Observer to now, I think I think the world has become a much smaller place, but also, if it makes sense, a bigger place with the kind of proliferation of social media, you can get close. We actually picked up one or two sources via Twitter who became very, very trusted sources by the end of it. And the reach we were able to get with the WD Sport brand with our stories was just incredible on the back of Facebook and Twitter. So, yeah, the landscape, it was almost unrecognisable from the time when I first covered the club. And also just the thirst for stories. You can have people, when I was at the Watford Observer, you had people kind of ringing you up on the landline saying, who are Watford going to sign? What do you know? And now it was kind of people just asking you instantly on whatever social media, form of social media they decided to use. So, yeah, and it was nice having that connection with the fans, if I'm honest. That's one thing I hope to perhaps continue via my own personal Facebook pages. A lot of fans become kind of friends and used to chat to people regularly. And that was something I really, really enjoyed, getting much closer to the people who really, really care about the club and really want to know what's happening day in, day out. So that was how the landscape shifted quite dramatically, really.
It's that whole thing of, but it's quite hard, I think, sometimes in social media to find the good. There's a lot of negativity and quick reaction and all the rest of it, but mm-hmm. it's great that you did find some good in it. And going forward, you're going to be sticking around the Watford world, but working at the heart of it.
Yeah, I'm going to see what the view's like from the other side of the fence, John. I think someone joked to me today about it's kind of the ultimate poacher turned gamekeeper, but I don't think I'm quite in gamekeeper territory yet. I think I'd like to see myself as a bit more of a facilitator, really, kind of continuing to produce kind of the featurey stories that people want to read and that went down so well. But this time, having no problem with getting access to players, although we did have an interview lined up with a player today. Probably won't take too many guesses to work out who it was. And he just turned around and said he's not doing it. So I don't think it matters sometimes who you're with, what badge you got on your blazer, who indeed pays your wages. If a player doesn't want to speak to you, then he doesn't want to speak. But it's all the fun of the fair and hurdles you have to overcome in this industry.
So you are going to be doing more feature sort of bits for the club rather than news stories and this is what's happening. It's more like tying things together.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to tread a fairly fine line. But speaking to the people who run the website there, and I think they've done a fantastic job with how it looks. I think they just want to get more eyeballs there. Obviously, we're not going to be doing kind of the real hard-nosed journalist stories that you traditionally see on WD Sport, but certainly going kind of behind the badge, as the NBC documentary says, and getting access to players. Me still bringing those kind of journalistic qualities to my writing, but just not necessarily the hard-nosed stuff. But we did a piece with Tom Cleverley this week, which was terrific. We've got various pieces and ideas lined up, so yeah, they'll be very, very featurey, but not necessarily very fluffy as people might think. It's the remit is kind of, you're going to see stuff on the club website that you necessarily wouldn't associate with the club and you wouldn't expect to see on there.
We're the Orns, you're the Orns. Come on, you Orns!
Jason, next up, Millwall, FA Cup fourth round. Are you going to do a completely new 11? Because 2 days later, we end up playing Arsenal. Do you set up a bunch of young lads for a loss at Millwall, followed by the first team getting a loss at Arsenal? Am I being too pessimistic?
That's the thing, because not long after the Arsenal game, we got a game at home to Burnley, which you'd say is bigger than the Arsenal away game. It's the potential 3 points at home to Burnley that's going to shape the season going forwards rather than the likely loss at Arsenal, I think.
First team out against Millwall, get through the FA Cup then. Put the lads out against the young lads and the senior players against Arsenal, and then everyone back, the first team back after a great win against Millwall then, yeah?
Exactly. And because the only way I could see us getting anything at Arsenal would be if Granit Xhaka did something stupid on the day and got himself sent off, but he's blown that by getting himself suspended by getting sent off today, so that's out of the window. I say that in jest, but there's almost a little part of me that just wonders if at Arsenal, Neil Warnock did it for Sheffield United once, didn't he? And then I think he got fined for it as well, which is ridiculous when you're made to name a 25-man squad for the Premier League. The Burnley one's the important one for me. So, and that's the one I'd want to have my full fit first 11 out for.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think we're live on TV for the Millwall game. We don't want to end up with egg on our faces. We need to get some sort of momentum going. I think a cup run is going to be good for the club and the supporters. I think my feelings on the FA Cup are clear and are on record. I want us to continue to do well. We've got some recent Wembley demons to put to bed. What better way to do that than in the FA Cup? So let's get up there to Millwall and beat that. I think the club went on record to say they didn't ask for the Arsenal game to be put back, which they have. I think they have every right to do because it was the cup game has moved for TV, but they requested that the Arsenal game wasn't moved, which indicates to me exactly as we're sort of surmising, they're focusing on the Burnley game. And, you know, there's always the little football part of the football fan in you that thinks, well, we might turn them over. We might, you know, that might be the stage that our boys sort of flex their muscle and really go for it with nothing to lose. But having been to Liverpool away and Tottenham at home, who are the other sort of clubs that we've played in that bracket recently, we've got absolutely turned over. So no reason to expect we could. It sounds depressing, but got absolutely no hope of getting anything at Arsenal, quite frankly. So yeah, let's rest some of the key performers. Let's work on getting our first 11 100% fit for that home game with Burnley. And you know, I've been quite negative in terms of where we're at in terms of our development and where we are in the league position. I think in terms of development, we feel we've stagnated and I feel like we've gone back a little bit. I think the squad needs more work than it did this time last year, for example. But in terms of league position, we're far from dead. You know, we're still above a lot of teams who are struggling. So a win against Burnley and things are going to look reasonable again, and there's every hope of a decent run in with a fully fit squad. But and I'm very loath to sort of say resting players does anything anyway, because I think players want to play. I think we just want to avoid injuries. The other side of the coin is we want to avoid losing 10-0 at Arsenal as well. You know, it's a tricky one. It's a very, very tricky week. We've got sort of all. Three sides of the coin, if there is such a thing. We've got FA Cup, which is a toss up. Do we risk players in that? Arsenal, do we risk players in that? And then Burnley, which is a must win. So, real interesting week, an exciting week. Three games in a week doesn't happen very much when you're in the Premier League. Kind of just sort of anything could happen. So I'm just sitting back, trying to enjoy it and letting it all wash over me. Yesterday, really. It was interesting going to Bournemouth yesterday. I don't think I've ever travelled to a game with less expectation. I think we still the Middlesbrough game was a one-off, really, because of the obvious situation around Graham and the football was 100% secondary for me. I didn't give the game a second thought before or after, really, to be perfectly honest. And Bournemouth, I just haven't really recovered from it. I just thought, well, whatever will be. We never really get anything here, so. Yeah, it's just sort of at the moment, it's so difficult to predict what's going to happen with Watford. So it's just, wait and see what's happening. Wait and see what happens.
Well, we will wait and see what happens. Just on that, thank you very much for everyone's feedback on last week's podcast. There was no chat about the game, as Mike said. We just sort of focused it on our stories and our feelings about the death of Graham. And I think some of you sort of sharing your thoughts on it helped a little bit for you, even if it took you a few days to actually get around to listen to it. And we hope to do another podcast, when we've got more time, to put it together, include as many of you in it as possible, just about Graham, if not the most important man in the club's history. Remember, you can get in touch, as always, on Twitter, at Watford Podcast, Facebook. You can find us by searching From the Wicker End or Watford Podcast. If you don't listen via a mobile device, if you do have an iPhone, then do whack us on your podcast app and subscribe button so you get it first and still for free. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
And thank you, Michael.
Hey, you're more than welcome.
Come on, you horns.